On episode 90 of the Meat Mafia podcast, we were lucky enough to be joined by the founder and president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, Sally Fallon Morrell. In addition to her work at the Weston A. Price Foundation, Sally has promoted traditions in food and farming through her book, Nourishing Traditions, which has sold over 120,000 copies in the U.S. In our conversation with Sally, we discussed why women, particularly of reproductive age, need to focus on animal-based nutrition and the importance of traditional foods in the diet, such as raw milk, liver, and other foods like cod liver oil. Speaking with Sally opened our eyes to the great work that's being done at the Weston A. Price Foundation, and if you haven't already connected with your local chapter, please do. They are a wealth of knowledge and a great resource for people who are looking to better connect with their farmers and their food system. Without further ado, Sally Fallon Morrell. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Equip Foods. Equip provides a complete source of grass-fed beef protein with no added chemicals, fillers, binding agents, or artificial coloring or sweeteners. If you're familiar with the supplement industry, you know that most supplements are loaded with ingredients that you can't even pronounce. Equip's Unflavored Prime has one single ingredient derived directly from grass-fed beef protein. For purists like ourselves who try to only consume balanced, real sources of nutrition, this protein powder checks all the boxes. Go check them out in the link below and use our promo code in the description to get a discount. We get questions all the time about how to incorporate beef liver into a healthy, balanced diet. The questions are usually around how to source high-quality beef liver, how to overcome the taste of liver, and how to travel and still be able to include beef liver into your diet. That's why we love Optimal Carnivore, which provides beef liver supplements as well as an organ complex for people to incorporate beef liver without the taste and with the convenience of just being able to pack it into a bag and toss it into your mouth when you're ready for your supplements. Beef liver is an important part of my diet because it provides me with the B12, copper, vitamin A that you can't really get from any other food groups. Beef liver is truly nature's vitamin, and being able to incorporate it in such an easy form, such as this supplement, makes it that much better. Go check out Optimal Carnivore and let us know what you think.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. We were just saying before we hit the record button that we're huge fans of everything that you've done through the Weston A. Price Foundation. We've both personally been starting to get involved with some local chapters, and we think that this could be a great episode for our audience. So we appreciate you coming on. We think as a starting point, we would just love to learn a little bit more about your backstory. You know, maybe how you learned about Weston A. Price and how did you end up founding this incredible organization?
Well, we've been around for a while. You know, didn't all happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But I learned about Weston Price in the early 1970s. I was bringing up my own children at the time and just completely resonated with me, his work. Mm-hmm. I loved to cook and loved French cooking. So I already was doing what he advocated, a high fat diet, included organ meats, mm-hmm. Lots of eggs, butter, cheese, et cetera. I couldn't get raw milk at the time. And I added cod liver oil after I read his book. And I kind of proved for myself that this diet works. None of my kids needed braces.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, and I needed braces. My siblings all needed braces. So I proved this to myself. And in 1990, I got the idea, why don't I write a cookbook that reflects Dr. Price's findings and puts his work more in the public eye? So I wrote Nourishing Traditions. And I wrote it with Mary Enig, and we felt that we needed something more than just a book. We needed something to keep the work going, to comment on all the studies that came out, most of which were misinterpreted. And so we founded the Weston A. Price Foundation in 1999. My husband was involved in this, and Dr. Tom Cowan. So we started the chapter system. We set up a campaign for real milk. We started publishing educational materials. Later, we started a podcast. I feel that everyone learns in a different way, and we should have our educational materials in many formats, in many forms. Mm. And from the very beginning, we published a journal. So we're now in volume 23. Of the journal and going strong. And we were a very strong voice during COVID to, against the notion that this is caused by a virus. Now, our theory is that the main cause is the rollout of 5G wireless technology. And of course, we're very strong. We always have been a strong voice against vaccinations and certainly the COVID vaccine. So here we are. We're big advocates of eating animal foods, meat and eggs and dairy, and especially organ meats, because they are so much more nutritious than the muscle meats. So one of my goals in life is to help make offal taste good.
Yeah, we that resonates with our audience, because, you know, one of the things we talk about all the time is the nutritional benefits of organ meats and how it's kind of fallen out of the American diet. Like, I remember, like, my grandparents used to cook organ meats, and it used to be a thing that was somewhat regularly served. But now it's like, it's very hard to find. It's making a comeback, but it's hard to find. So I'm curious, like, what have you seen over the course of your involvement with the Weston A. Price Foundation, just in terms of kind of the health of the U.S. overall, and kind of observing it from through the lens of the Weston A. Price Foundation?
Well, I think the health of the, we all know, the health of the United States overall is declining, especially in our children. We have an absolute crisis with our children today. One in two has some kind of serious health problem, very often autism or learning disabilities. And it's exactly what Dr. Price would predict. You can only go so many generations on a diet of what he called the displacing foods of modern commerce. And we're, you know, many, many of these children will not have children. They will not reproduce. We've come to the end of the line, really. At the same time, we have this small remnant of parents and people who are taking our message to heart, the message of nutrient-dense food, and are applying this diet as a preconceptual diet, and then during pregnancy, lactation, and growth of the child. These children are amazing. They're so healthy, and they are our hope for the future. They're, you know, they will be the ones having children in the future, and already are. And so eventually we'll take over the world, right? But in the meantime, it's just a very small number of people. I call it natural selection of the wise. And of course, those of you who are Bible students know that the Bible talks about a remnant. A remnant will be left. That's how nature works. Nature bats last. So.
What's also interesting about your story too, Sally, is I didn't know this. You said that you started going down the rabbit hole of Dr. Price's work and experimenting with diet and nutrition in the 70s. And because that's always the question, right? Is you get into something a little bit later in your life and you say, okay, I feel amazing on this diet, but I'm curious, you know, how would my jaw structure be, the quality of my tooth health, if I was able to eat, you know, an ancestrally consistent diet? And so you actually had kids that were able to be raised on, you know, nutrient dense foods, animal protein, chewing the right way. And so it sounds like you saw that they have perfect teeth, which is so rare, because I don't know what the numbers and percentages are, but pretty much everyone needs braces. And a lot of what they're saying is it's because we have this overabundance of soft foods. So that's so interesting.
It has nothing to do with the texture of the foods. Babies' first foods in all traditional cultures are soft, and a lot of traditional cultures, their foods are dairy foods. This theory that it's because of soft foods is not correct. It has to do with the nutrient density of the foods.
Interesting.
And nourishing the child in the womb, the child isn't eating anything, but you can tell right from the beginning what kind of facial structure the child has. It's a very unfortunate theory. If this theory were true, you could just give your kid hard candy and he'd end up with a wide jaw.
Right.
We just had a photo shoot at our house. I did a thing on broth, and I was really struck. There were five people in the crew, and all of them had beautiful facial structure, wide jaws, straight teeth. And I got to asking them, I said, well, now, what did you eat growing up? They didn't have raw milk. They didn't have cod liver oil. But every single one of them ate liver growing up. One of them said, my mother hated to cook, but she once a week she cooked liver because she really liked it. So all of them had liver. Liver's not a hard food to chew. It's kind of a soft food. So it has nothing to do with the hardness of the food. Of course, these people had strong jaws and could chew hard food. But as Dr. Price said, it's the very high levels of minerals and very high levels of the fat soluble vitamins A, D, and K.
Mm.
And those are in the organ meats and fats.
Mm. You mentioned prenatal development. I feel like that's one aspect that gets very often overlooked. And it's something that I think we're very interested in, where, you know, people should be focusing more on their nutrition as they kind of reach that age of when they're trying to reproduce and actually have a kid. So what sort of things would the Weston A. Price Foundation be talking about when it comes to prenatal nutrition?
Yeah, we have a preconceptual diet. We actually have a fridge magnet for the
preconceptual diet.
And this is for men and women at least 6 months before conception.
Mm-hmm.
So it includes cod liver oil, liver, raw milk or raw dairy products, raw cheese, lots and lots of butter, eggs every day with extra yolks, and then just good food, meat and bone broth is part of it, fermented foods, plenty of salt. Baby needs salt for development. So it's not a hard diet.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Now, if they've been on the standard American diet, or if they've been practicing vegetarianism or eating a lot of soy, we recommend that they do this diet for 2 years before they
wow.
can, yeah, because they really have a lot of catching up to do. And it is just so sad to see that vegetarianism, especially veganism, is a fad now among teenage girls.
Mm.
And you know, when you're a teenage girl, the last thing you're thinking about is having healthy children. You're thinking about looking beautiful and be cool and have boyfriends and so forth. But there comes a time in your life when nothing will be more important than having a baby.
Mm.
And these girls, it's just tragic. They don't know what to do to have a baby. We're not teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good study back in the early 2000s, I think it was, out of Harvard. And it found that women who were trying to get pregnant, if they were doing low-fat dairy foods, they couldn't get pregnant. But if they switched to high-fat dairy foods, they could get pregnant.
Wow.
And this was a real embarrassment to the people who did the study, because they were people who'd been pushing low-fat all these years. His name was Javaro. So he said, well, okay, if you want to get pregnant, then drink full fat milk and eat ice cream until you get pregnant, and then go back to your low fat diet.
Oh, geez.
And don't you think that the diet that you need to get pregnant is the same diet that your child needs to develop properly in the womb?
Right.
But the dietary guidelines and what we're telling women is it's genocide. It's really malicious and tragic. And even if they're eating meat, one of the things they say is, well, you eat no fat, lean meat, skinless chicken breast, low fat milk, egg whites without the yolks or protein powders. And no traditional culture would do this. They never ate lean meat. They always ate meat with the fat, because you need vitamin A to process meat.
Mm-hmm.
If you're eating just a lot of lean meat, your body will use up vitamin A, and then you don't have any vitamin A anymore. And then you really get sick.
Mm-hmm.
But if you eat the organ meats and eat the meat with the fat, then you get plenty of vitamin A, and you can use that protein then.
Mm-hmm. Is that the same reason for taking the cod liver oil? I know that's yes. that's something that's often debated, but it's typically because of the vitamin A retinol that in such a high concentration, right, that you're taking that cod liver?
Right. You get the balance of A and D. There's only certain brands that we recommend, because most of the brands at the pharmacy or whatever are processed with such high heat that they actually have to add synthetic vitamins back in. So there's only a few brands that we recommend that are low temperature processed. And along with the A and D, you also need vitamin K. And that's why Dr. Price gave high vitamin butter oil as a source of vitamin K. Poultry fats are a good source of vitamin K, poultry liver, emu oil, Australian emu oil is another good source of vitamin K.
Mm. We have a close friend that we've met in Austin, and she's going to love this episode, because she had pretty bad ulcerative colitis a few years ago,
uh-huh.
started going down the Weston A. Price rabbit hole, And so she used the diet that you're talking about to basically heal herself of ulcerative colitis.
Oh, wonderful.
And, yeah. And she, I believe her and her husband, I think they're like 30 or 31, mm-hmm. maybe 32 in their early 30s. And she mentioned anecdotally that, you know, she's been eating very nutrient dense animal products for the last mm-hmm. 3 to 4 years. And her and her husband had no issues getting pregnant at all. Good. And obviously it's anecdotal, but we're both 28 years old. And so we're starting to see the effects of women that are our age that have been on birth control since they were 12 years old. And then all of a sudden they just think, oh, I can get off birth control and get pregnant. And, you know, 70% of vegetarian and vegan practitioners are female. So that's why I think the information that you're preaching about is so important, because a lot of people just don't understand this information about how diet can influence these outcomes.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Yeah, it's really tragic. Although our influence is growing, you know, we have a big membership and you know, the influence goes far beyond your members. So,
yeah. And so you are up to, correct me if I'm wrong, Sally, I think I read, is it 15,000 members nationwide and over 400 local chapters?
We're about 12,000 members over 400 local chapters.
Beautiful. That's so amazing.
The local chapters all have a mailing list, a email list, whatever. And a lot of them have, you know, potlucks and things like that. Mm. So, and you don't have to be a member to participate in chapter activities. We hope that people do become members. But
What sort of things will happen at those chapter events? Is it really just knowledge sharing and kind of creating community?
Knowledge sharing. They do presentations. Very often they invite local farmers to have booths. But usually it's a potluck dinner.
Nice.
Yeah. And the power of that shared community is so huge. And that's what we talk a lot about. I had some pretty bad autoimmune issues about 6 years ago. And so I went down like the carnivore rabbit hole for a little while to try and repair my gut. And one of the hardest parts about it was more so just like the social pressure of being in the office and dealing with coworkers and things like that. Yeah. So it's almost like you're effectively solving for that with the community, because you're creating this local tribe of people that are all trying to follow this Weston A. Price approach of using diet and lifestyle, and connecting with people in a local community is massive to build repeatable habits and solutions.
A lot of people, especially parents, feel very alone in raising their children this way. Mm. But, you know, our diet is a really fun diet. It's not an extreme diet. It's not too extreme in animal foods. It's not too extreme in plant foods. Mm-hmm. It includes all the food groups. It just puts an emphasis on how they're raised and processed. Dr. Price found that the healthiest people were on a mixed diet. Mm-hmm. And they were the strongest. And they had meat, especially liver. Had raw milk, but they had plenty of plant foods also and grains. So that's good news. You know, we don't have to have this extreme diet to be healthy.
How about lifestyle, kind of the other component of this whole equation? Because the modern lifestyle is unhealthy in a lot of ways. We're not getting enough sunlight, or, you know, you mentioned 5G exposure. I'd be curious to get your take on that too. But you know, what sort of things are people unaware of that the lifestyle, in terms of lifestyle, that Weston A. Price Foundation might have some information on for people?
Well, first and foremost is the food. And in that food, the worst thing are the industrial seed oils, which are being promoted as healthy, see, but they are the worst thing in the diet, and especially as they're replacing the animal fat. So that's one thing. But I think second is the EMF smog that people are being subjected to today, even if they don't have it in their house, the satellite now. So we do recommend that people, at least in their houses, turn off the Wi-Fi, get everything wired. Whatever is coming into your house, whether it's Fios or Wi-Fi or what, you can wire it from where it comes in, so you're not sitting in front of a computer that's, you know, X-raying you or whatever. I think that's a very important. Minimal use of cell phones, have a landline in your house. We were really one of the first to warn about the problems with the 5G. And here it is, you know, being pushed with. I just saw something about 5G on Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. So wow. you can, when you get to the top, you can text your mates and tell them you got there.
Yeah, that's it. That's incredible. Especially you're talking about how you've had a very vocal stance about some of the things that you don't agree with in terms of COVID protocol. You know, I think a big side effect of everything that's happening is people are more plugged in than ever before. Like we've been doing a lot of research on just the harmful effects of EMFs. And like, I think there's a correlation between EMFs and like a decreased sperm count too. And a lot of men are just carrying their cell phone around in their pocket.
Yeah, and they're
and who knows what that's going to be doing long-term.
Yeah. Yeah. Or in their backpack. Yeah. Other things that are, I mean, you know, we toxins come and go. In the 1800s, the toxin was arsenic. It was everywhere. It was in the wallpaper and outgassing from the wallpaper. I think the two toxins today are mercury and fluoride.
Mm-hmm.
And the mercury is coming from fillings, of course, but also from vaccinations. And we know that children who are autistic have very high levels of mercury in their brains. And where is this coming from? Well, fillings and vaccinations. And then fluoride is the other one, which is being put into the water. So yeah, every age has its toxin. The Romans had lead, the Victorians had arsenic, and we've got mercury and fluoride.
Fluoride's an interesting one, and I know it's one that you can filter for, but most people are just drinking tap water, or at least exposed to it through their shower too, or dentistry.
Yeah.
So, I was curious about chlorine as well. I think chlorine's one where it's in all of our tap water, but also it's 50% or 50 times more potent in our shower steam.
I never heard that. Well, I know that what they're using today is chloramine, which doesn't degrade. Whereas the old chlorine, you could fill a sink and let it sit there and the chlorine would gas off, but the chloramine doesn't gas off. And remember, that's going, you know, we have the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
Right.
And I keep asking, are you testing for fluoride and chlorine in the Chesapeake Bay? Because it's all going into the Chesapeake Bay. No wonder the fish are dying and the crabs aren't reproducing and so forth.
Right.
But nobody answers me when I say this.
Of course.
Yeah.
One of the things you just mentioned, you touched on fluoride, and we had on Dr. Kevin Stock a few months ago. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's a carnivore dentist. He pretty much eats all red meat, and also he's been experimenting with raw milk too. And he's a huge fan of Weston A. Price work. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of great stuff and content on his blog. He'd actually probably be a great guest for the podcast. But one of the things that he mentioned was talking about some of the harmful effects of fluoride. So I'm just curious, right? Is there a way to hold off on fluoride if you're just talking to a conventional dentist? Or do you recommend just trying to find a dentist that's just a practitioner of the Weston A. Price
lifestyle? Yeah, just say no fluoride. If they kick you out, you find somebody else. We have plenty of dentists who don't use fluoride, don't use mercury, who use palate widening for, you know, narrow jaws and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And I think on your website too, Sally, for the local Princeton chapter, I think the chapter gives a few dentists that are practitioners of this, which is so helpful to have that curated list of resources.
I just want to go back to these all meat diets because a lot of them, they're eating raw meat and they're not eating any salt. Homogeneous diet. This is extremely dangerous. First of all, we absolutely need salt because salt not only provides sodium, but it provides chloride to make hydrochloric acid. And without hydrochloric acid, you can't digest meat.
Mm-hmm.
Also, cooking meat, which is what people do all over the world. They eat some of it raw, but mostly they cook it. It unfolds. These meat proteins are very tightly wound, and it unfolds them and exposes a lot of receptors to the enzymes in the digestive tract. And I think if you're eating all raw and low salt, you're going to end up with a protein deficiency.
Interesting.
Just because you can't digest it without the...
Well, cooking helps you digest it, and the salt is essential for digesting. Right. I know there's these all raw diets where they're drinking celery juice, okay? And they think the celery juice is going to give them sodium. Well, you need to drink 17 cups of celery juice to get enough sodium to meet your requirements.
Mm.
That's a lot of celery juice. And Celery is one of the dirty dozen, so you need to get organic celery juice. And, you know, why not just have a teaspoon and half of salt, you know, unrefined salt instead of 70 cups of celery juice. I mean, to me, the celery juice looks so disgusting. And people didn't have blenders, you know, traditional cultures didn't have blenders. The plant foods were usually cooked, usually added to the stew pot, so to speak.
Is there a type of salt that you guys recommend?
Yes, very much so. We recommend unrefined salt, so it doesn't have aluminum in it, and it has all the trace minerals. There's many, many brands. I think they're all quite similar. But I think we're not getting enough salt, actually. We absolutely need a teaspoon and a half a day, but some people need a lot more salt. You need more salt when you're under stress, when the weather's hot. I put a pinch of salt in all the water that I drink. I think we're not getting enough salt.
We're the same way. We consume a ton of salt. Just we're both active, and when it's like I can tell when I'm dehydrated, and it's usually because of it's less so because of water and more so because I don't have enough sodium in my system.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned this too, because Sally, I did kind of like my own version of the Ogenus diet in February and March of this year. And what I mean by that is I was just eating more raw meat. I would buy grass-fed, grass-finished regenerative meat from the local farmer's market in San Diego. But I would put a lot of raw butter on it, and I would also salt all my meat, because I knew from all the endurance stuff, I was like, I don't understand why there's an anti-salt push going on, because I personally just feel way sharper when I have higher sodium levels. And I think it was the combination of more raw foods and more salt. I literally felt the best that I'd ever felt. My skin heated up, my energy felt great. So, which basically just an anecdote of saying we perfectly, you know, we believe with everything you're saying. Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be raw. I think we should all eat some raw meat. You know, I like steak tartare or whatever, but you should also eat some meat cooked.
Yeah,
totally.
I'm curious. So we touched on the veganism in kind of like the teenage girls demographic, but now there's this whole push from institutions or cities for vegan Fridays and meatless Mondays. Are you guys taking a stance on or trying to push back against some of that, just because it's such a huge policy shift?
I know we've written about this and we've warned against it many, many times. People need to realize that you just make a lot more money from plant foods than animal foods. That's where this push is coming from. If you go to a restaurant and buy a steak, 50% of what you pay for that steak pays for the cost of the food. If you buy a vegetarian meal, it's only 25%. And if you buy a muffin, it's 15%. So they'd much rather you ordered vegetarian meals and ate plant-based products than meat-based products. It's all about profit.
Got it.
Interesting.
Yeah, we just wrote a piece on that where it's like, you know, a lot of these companies, whether it's, you know, Impossible Foods, Beyond Beef, et cetera, it's like they're viewing food almost like technology that can be controlled, like how Bill Gates, you know, built Microsoft. They're viewing food as technology, which is really scary, right? Because it's like you can create a patent and then actually have control over that. Whereas like something like beef, et cetera, there's no one's property. It's nature. It's God's property.
So I'm not against technology. I've always said this. I come from a family of, you know, businessmen and technologists, and I like cars. I like computers. I really like having a washing machine.
Yes.
The great labor saving device. It frees up women. A lot of these technologies have been more freeing to women than to men and allowed them to, you know, fulfill themselves, whatever. So I'm all for technology, but for food, we just need low tech technologies, glass jars and stainless steel in your dairy, and milking machines is a good technology to have. So there's some technologies that are important for food, but, they're low tech technologies.
Yeah. And speaking of milking machines, something that we're both big, we're huge admirers of the work that you have done over the last 20 so years to really correct the narrative on raw milk.
Yeah, it needed Harrison, correcting. Yeah.
Yes. And Harrison was the one, he initially started reading The Untold Story of Milk, which you wrote the foreword for that book. Is that correct?
Yes, I was the editor and I was the publisher.
So it's such an unbelievable book, and it completely opened our eyes to just the demonization that dairy has gone through the last 20 years.
Way longer than that.
But I think we just love to learn a little bit more about, you know, just kind of what got you interested in correcting the narrative of raw dairy and just what you've done over the last two decades to get that message out there.
Well, I had a lot of trouble breastfeeding my boys. My daughter, I was okay, but my boys were just so hungry and I was tired and I didn't have enough milk. And so I had an old book with a formula recipe based on raw milk. So I was able, with a lot of searching, to find raw milk at the time. It wasn't nearly as available as today. And I gave this to my three boys and they just thrived on it. And so I just felt everyone needs to have access to raw milk, if only to, because they're having trouble breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
But what Dr. Price found was that the cultures that had milk, they grew taller and they were very robust, had very strong teeth. So it's really a big part of our message. If the cultures that didn't have milk had to eat bones, they crushed up bird bones or animal bones and added it to their food, or they fermented the fish and got the calcium that way. And you know, that's not something that a lot of people are going to do in this culture. And because this whole thing is about strong bones, strong teeth, strong bones, so the face can be wide. If the bones aren't strong, the face is going to be more narrow. So raw milk is the way to do it.
Yeah. I found it really surprising, the stories around dairy distilleries and how that was sort of the genesis of pasteurization. And pasteurization was really just supposed to be a stopgap for this period in time when there was a lot of disease going on because these cities were growing like crazy and we didn't have a food supply that could support it. So,
and there were no cars. Everything was horses.
Right.
So the cities were stinking piles of manure everywhere.
And some of the language in The Untold Story of Milk around describing some of these dairy distilleries is actually incredible. And it was like the dairy itself wasn't even actually dairy. Like, you couldn't even make cheese out of it.
Yeah, and then right.
Feeding it to young children. And now that's kind of like taking the whole dairy industry and reshaped it. Do you think there's any sort of way to like reverse course here and like get people back aware of the powers of raw milk and kind of the
nutritional value? It's happening slowly. Raw milk is increasing. Our farm produces raw milk. We sell out every weekend. People appreciate the value. And there was a study that came out in 2019 that I found very interesting. It came out of China and it looked at ways of processing milk, boiling, microwaving, conventional drying, and then freeze drying. And all four of these methods rendered the proteins toxic. And when fed to rats, they developed problems with the spleen, the blood. I can't remember the other one, but they also were not as smart. They were stupid and had brain damage. And I think, and they said in the study, we've got to figure out a different way of storing and keeping milk. Well, we have the technology today to get raw milk to the public. We have refrigeration. We have stainless steel. Raw milk will last for 2 weeks in a bottle if it's kept cold. So we have the technology today to get raw milk to anybody. And in the meantime, consumption of pasteurized milk is declining and the dairies are going out of business. And I just don't think there'll be a pasteurized milk business in another 20 years. Raw milk will eclipse. We actually have a couple of states where there's more raw milk dairies than conventional dairies.
That's awesome.
Wow. So
I think Maryland will be one of those pretty soon because we hardly have any conventional dairies left in Maryland.
Wow. So you're hopeful, Sally, that there will be a world where raw milk is legal in all 50 states?
Yes. Well, we're working on it. We're down to, we have about 5 states left to make it legal. And I eventually want to see it sold in all stores in all states.
Yeah.
It's very available to people.
How does it get to that point? I mean, it needs to become more decentralized, I guess, but
yes, you can't have, you know, three or four huge dairies in Texas and get this raw milk to everybody. It needs to be local, and it's supposed, it should be from cows on pasture and full fat. Raw milk is unprocessed, full fat, and pasture fed. What we call real milk, excuse me, real milk.
Yeah, it's interesting for you to say that too, because I think California is a very interesting state where I'm at. I'm in San Diego currently, and I don't want to, we don't need to say them by name, but there's basically two farms, right, that have such a stronghold over the market that they're able to supply basically every single Sprouts grocery store with raw milk.
Yeah.
So it does make you question, like, if a farm is that big that they can scale across the entire state, you know, what does the treatment of the cow look like? Are they able
to? Yeah. I mean, well, we can, it could be improved, but it's good milk. The milk that I found for my boys was Stuve's milk. It was all confinement, but it worked. But yeah, we need more dairies in California, but I can tell you they're the only two dairies making money in California. And that's good. And, you know, one is 450 cows. It shows that it can be done. But I prefer to see, you know, millions of small dairies.
Yes. For someone that's listening to this that is interested in connecting with a local farm to get their dairy, are there any like table stakes questions that you think people should be asking their farmer to just make sure that that is the right dairy that they should be buying their milk from?
Well, we asked the chapter leaders to go out and look at the farm and describe the farm in their food resource list. And we, at our website, realmilk.com, which we've just overhauled, and now it has an interactive map. It's really good. The farmer describes their methods. And of course, you can always go out and look.
Are there any resources? You mentioned realmilk.com, but just outside of that, even books, we mentioned The Untold Story of Milk. Is there anything that you would recommend for people to dive into if this is their first time hearing about the Weston A. Price Foundation?
Well, I would go to our website. Something will pop up and say, would you like an info pack? And we will send you an info pack with our main brochure. I would start there. There's also a tour of our website for beginners. On the right-hand nav bar, you can click on that. Our website is overwhelming. It is huge. Anything we've ever published is on there. So yeah, there's a lot to look at. By the way, we just put up a really great search engine, a Google search engine. So you can really search the site too.
Well, it's honestly incredible. Like you're charging such a cheap price to become a member, and you get so much.
I think so. It's only $40. We've never raised that price. If you go to a chapter meeting or a conference, we often do them for $30, and you become part of our community. You get the journal, you get emails about things going on in your state. Everyone should be a member.
And the amount of free resources you guys have as well is pretty incredible. Like some of the stories about raw milk that we referenced are all on your website, and they do.
We don't charge for anything that's on the websites. We don't charge for our podcasts. And by the way, we've just launched a restaurant rating program called 12 Spoons. We've got about 100 reviews up so far, and we'd love for you to do reviews. And anyone can do a review, and anyone can access the website. You don't have to be members.
Which is such a valuable resource, right? Because we get asked about that all the time, and it's something we think about too. Like, I'm visiting Harry. We're in Austin right now, which is great because there are some seed oil free restaurants that cook with beef tallow and local Texas ingredients. But there's still always that question of, okay, what fat or oil are they using?
Well, you should please do some reviews for us.
Definitely.
Very easy.
We definitely will. And we also, you're going to like this. We actually recently spoke at the Beef Initiative Conference in Crawford, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the panelists was Ann and Weldon Warren that own Holy Cow Beef. And they're fantastic. They're based in West Texas, and they're huge advocates of the work that you all are doing. I think they've been, you know, members of the local West Texas chapter for a long time. They specifically said there's so much content and so much trailblazing that the Weston A. Price Foundation has done that you need to, like, it's worth it for you to pay the membership just to financially support it. Because it's like, look, if you like all the work that they're doing, the only way that they're going to be able to continue to pump out this content is to pay to become a member to financially support them. So I thought that that's a good little story.
Very nice. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're fantastic too. But no, Sally, this has been an amazing conversation. We appreciate you coming on. We appreciate the work that you've done, because you've had a massive influence in our take on nutrition and where we are now. What would be the best way for people to connect with you if they want to learn a little bit more about the work that you're doing?
Well, WestonAPrice.org is our website. And as I say, when you get that little pop-up, annoying little pop-up thing, say yes and you'll get an info pack. Okay. I also have a blog called nourishingtraditions.com. And I just wrote a blog called Weird Diets. Two of the diets are vegan diets that I wrote about, but the other is the Ogenous diet, because I think there are some problems with it. And it's certainly better than a vegan diet. And Ogenous diet is good because it has raw dairy, but I still think there's some problems with it. So I do try to keep up on things. During COVID, I did a lot through my blog that kind of woke people up.
Excellent. People up. Yeah. We'll link to that, and we'll have to give that a read for ourselves
nourishingtraditions.com.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then that's westonaprice.org and realmilk.com if you're looking for raw milk.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Love it. Well,
now, where are you getting your raw milk in Austin?
So I go to the Jersey Barnyard out in LaGrange. Mm-hmm. It's a great spot. It's about an hour outside of Austin. They raise only Jersey cows. Mm-hmm.
Anybody delivering into Austin?
There is Richardson's. They mm-hmm. go to the farmer's market every week, but it's an order ahead type of deal. So you have to reserve ahead of time, mm-hmm. but they're good as well.
Okay.
The cool thing about the Jersey Barnyard is that they actually don't deliver into Austin. They're like an hour drive. So they want people to kind of be intentional about going out, and they want you to come to the farm and see the facilities and see the conditions that the cows are kept in. Yeah. And they're also amazing people. And we went out and just talked to them for like an hour, because we just wanted to learn a little bit more about their story. And they have nothing to gain by this, but they were just telling us all these insane anecdotes of people that had cancer and all these other metabolic diseases that were effectively curing themselves by incorporating raw milk and colostrum into the diet.
Yeah. It's really a healing food. It was a wonderful food for cancer patients.
Yeah,
totally. Totally. But yeah, no, there are some great farms, but yeah, this has been an amazing conversation, Sally. Thank you so much for doing
this. Thanks for having me, and best of luck to you. And yeah, let me know when you post this, and we'll publicize it.
Sounds great. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Sally.
Thank you.
Thank you.